With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Monday. This is Let's Go There on Channel Q. We're here for you weekdays, bringing you all the news and entertainment you need to know about.
Yes, yes, we are here and back for another beautiful week in this hellhole we call 2020.
Wow, that's positive thinking. Motivation from Ryan.
It was very positive. I said a beautiful week. I use very descriptive, wonderful adjectives to then land into the pile of trash that we all.
Well, listen, we're also excited because, we have a week off next week. We have our little vacation before we finish up the year. So we will be taking off, but bringing you best of episodes. And let's get into some what's trending this hour. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy answered lawmakers' questions today during a House Oversight Committee hearing. DeJoy, as you might know or might not, as a reminder, is a Republican donor and Trump ally. He's faced accusations that he's intentionally sabotaging the Postal Service operations after he made service changes in the run-up to the election. Now, he has said that those changes will now be on hold and not happen until after the election season. But here he is being questioned about Postal Service pricing, and it's awkward.
What is the cost of a first-class postage stamp?
55 cents.
Just wanted to check. What about to mail a postcard?
I don't know, ma'am.
You don't know the cost to mail a postcard?
I don't.
What if I want to mail you said 55 cents for a first class stamp, but what if it's like one of those greeting cards that's a square envelope? Then what is the postage?
I'll submit that I know very little about a postage stamp.
It is so cringy. That's Representative Katie Porter, who is drilling him. But at least he's honest. You can hear him laughing at the questions and his lack of knowledge around these things.
You know, Katie Porter is like one of the newest. Oh my God, that was my dog. She just walked in. But anyway, Katie Porter is one of the newest people that I feel like has gotten this national attention and publicity. And I'm obsessed with her. She is so hardcore and just a badass. Like, can you imagine an AOC and a Katie Porter ticket? Like, how incredible is that?
The next 10 to 20 years are going to be huge for the Democratic Party.
And I also don't care about this postmaster guy. Like, he shows his cards. You know, they were protesting outside of his house last night. And I feel like, well, what if he's not there? What if he don't even hear all of that?
I mean, it seems like he doesn't really see what's going on or understand. She goes, I'm concerned about your understanding of this agency, as she questioned him about all these pricings and what actually went down. It was really interesting, to say the least, to watch. Now, authorities issued a curfew in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as angry crowds gathered in protest after Jacob Blake, a Black man, was shot and seriously wounded by police Sunday evening. The shooting occurred just after 5 p.m. local time, when officers from the Kenosha Police Department responded to a reported domestic incident. The officers provided immediate medical aid to Jacob Blake, who was shot. He was listed in serious condition at the time, and that's according to a press release from the police department over there. And a lot of people are responding and sharing news around this. Kamala Harris tweeted, Jacob Blake should not be fighting for his life right now. And Joe Biden said there must be an immediate investigation. The officers involved should be held accountable. Jacob, our nation is praying for you and your entire family.
Yeah, that story coming out today was a hard, well, last night, to be honest, but seeing the video clips, that's a hard story. And obviously it sucks to see. And it's really heartbreaking to see just another Black man fighting for his life. I don't know what else to say, to be honest. I really don't. Yeah.
Now let's move on to some stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, I got your tea report, those pop culture stories that are trending right now. And over the weekend, you know, Rose McGowan is really, really having a few words with people. Democrats, Republicans, now her charmed co-star, Alyssa Milano. They are back on it again, really fighting it out. She basically accuses Alyssa Milano of being a fraud in a very ugly Twitter feud. So what she said is this. She said, what have the Democrats done to solve anything? Help the poor, help black and brown people. And that's her really kind of calling everyone out. Well, Milano, Alyssa actually responded with more than 20 tweets of examples in chronological order of the party's accomplishments. She also suggested that McGowan, who accused Harvey Weinstein of rape and became one of the most prominent voices of the Me Too movement, was a fraud. Rose then starts to being like, okay, here's what I have to say to you. Rose said, you threw a fit in front of the crew yelling, they don't pay me enough to do this crap. Appalling behavior on the daily. I cried every time we got renewed because you made that set toxic AF. Now get off of my coattails, you effing fraud. And they were just going back and forth on a very long Twitter feud. Like I said, it got ugly. And if you want to check that out, head over to WeirdChannelQ.com. And those are your tea reports. Pop culture moments that are trending right now.
Drama. Okay, again, Feed Our Families continues as we work to help children and their families all over Southern California who are going to bed hungry. And it's easy for you to help out, contribute. Just text the word NEED to 76278. $1 can make a huge difference. And today, LA Car Guy is matching all donations, dollar for dollar, up to $5,000. So please contribute and help out. We appreciate it. Now coming up, the RNC kicks off this evening, and we have everything you need to know next in 10 minutes.
Donald Trump for 4 more years, and with your continued support and with God's help, we're going to make America great again. Again.
That was VP Mike Pence, and the Republican National Convention begins tonight for 4 days of in-person and online events featuring conservative voices, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and of course, President Donald Trump, who's actually going to be appearing every single day of the convention, plus delivering a speech Thursday night. And here he is actually today accepting his party's nomination.
I'm going to really drive him crazy. You say 12 more years.
12 more years!
Because... we caught them doing some really bad things in 2016. Let's see what happens. We caught them doing some really bad things. We have to be very careful because they're trying it again with this whole 80 million mail-in ballots that they're working on, sending them out to people that didn't ask for them. They didn't ask. They just get them. And it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's not going to be possible to tabulate, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. We have to be very, very careful, and you have to watch every.
And back with us to dive in what we can expect for the rest of the week is editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, Natalie Jennings. Thanks for being here. Happy Monday.
Hey, guys.
Okay, so let's dive in. What is the goal of this whole thing, the theme of Land of the X? It seems like Land of Greatness, Land of This. Like, what can we expect from this week?
So this is where, think of this as the Republican Party giving you a picture of where it is right now and also making the case, sort of a rebuttal to what Biden and Democrats said last week, making the case for why they deserve a chance for 4 more years in government. And a lot of this is going to be aimed at picking up more voters, making their case. But the way we see the programming right now, it's also designed to get excitement. Gin up the people who are inclined to vote for Republicans and President Trump already.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Trump all weekend said that this convention was going to be very uplifting and positive, the complete opposite of how he described the DNC. But obviously, he didn't kick off the convention that way. What can this tell us about how he might be seeing his campaign play out?
Yeah, he did say that. A lot of his surrogates said that it was a grim picture that Democrats painted, and they're going to be in contrast to that. This is a tough sell, I think, because a lot of the reality of people in America right now is not positive and uplifting. So it's going to be quite a feat to try to paint something as, you know, this is so much good going on when the backdrop is economic health crises and, you know, this is President Trump's America. This is the incumbent talking about wanting to continue things, not saying I'm going to come in and change things. He's got to make the argument that he's going to be a change agent from his own administration.
Yeah, and we know some of the administration is speaking, of course, including Kellyanne Conway, who just stepped down. But let's talk about their other speakers, because there's these viral hitmakers like the gun-toting couple speaking tonight and Nick Sandman, Covington High students. What was the choice behind that, or like the decision behind those choices?
Think of those as designed to trigger the libs, I think, you know, and I think they loop in both media, Democrats, you know, anti-Trump Republicans, and they put all these people in one basket. And a lot of these are designed to agitate them, which they correctly probably think will also excite the people who are in defensive of these folks that they're going to have rolling out.
Definitely. Again, we are talking to Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, about the RNC happening all week long. We're bringing you coverage right here on Let's Go There.
We sure are. But I do want to kind of get away from the RNC a little bit, because who needs that drama? But I do want to know about Trump's announcement Sunday night about plasma. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, so he came out and these are things, there's been treatments kind of going throughout the course of COVID. People are trying things to see what the results are going to be. So he came out and brought out two health officials, the head of the FDA and the head of the Health and Human Services Agency, to say that plasma treatment, grabbing plasma from people who have had COVID-19, putting it in people who haven't or have it currently, shores them up against it. They kind of botched the numbers in the rollout. Even the health officials botched sort of saying what this does, saying how many people it saves. It sounds promising, but not quite as promising as they made it sound. And we've seen a strategy of President Trump throughout this to look for a quick fix and to, you know, grab onto things that aren't proven or inflate things that might seem promising. This seems like a case of the latter. It certainly could do some good, but you know, we've seen this from Trump before, and it seems like another case of there's still a lot to be figured out about this.
Well, speaking of that, Trump's second term agenda is full of empty promises. Is this something his supporters really even care about?
I think there's nothing in here that really, you know, he put up this list. Is it like 50 bullet points? It's bullet points, quite a lot of bullet points, but it's nothing in detail. It's more positions, I think, more goals than policies. Things that will appeal, they've got a lot of buzzwords, promote American exceptionalism, bring back manufacturing jobs, China, China, China.
Well, yeah, and also, like, how is he going to pay for all this? It had no actual clear, like, submit, like, oh, we're going to do this.
Plan, yeah.
Paying for things is something, you know, get ready if President Trump doesn't win, because we're going to hear a lot more about how much things cost and the realistic, you know, chances of things passing than we hear now. There's holdups right now on coronavirus relief, in part because of cost on that. But President Trump, I think, has come around in a lot of ways to saying this is something that we are going to do. And it's, you know, regardless of cost, we can expect that to swing back if there's Democrats in charge and people being much more concerned about how much things cost.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. All right. Well, stick around with us, because coming up, we're breaking down what Joe Biden's cabinet could look like. The future of the White House with Natalie Jennings from The Washington Post, next in 10 minutes. As the DNC has come and gone, many are wondering now what Vice President Joe Biden's cabinet might look like. And back with us to share the big names that could be on that list is editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, Natalie Jennings. So let's get right into this. First, what's the role of the cabinet exactly? Why is this something that is on people's minds?
Well, because these are the people who sort of pick a topic area, pick a you know, policy area, and these are the people who are going to have the president's ear the most on these issues. I think it's funny. So we got this question of who will be Biden's number two 2 weeks ago, about thereabouts, and we move right on to figuring out the next questions. I think what we're going to do is take a lot of people who didn't make that position. So Kamala Harris is the VP, everybody who is being considered that, you can just go ahead and slide them into a bucket for consideration for all of these positions.
Wow, I mean, yeah. Obviously, like, making a decision like this feels so important. Could this be where we see Joe Biden has more progressive leaders in his cabinet?
I think you can expect a diversity of, you know, racial and gender diversity, but I think you can also expect some ideological diversity for him to, you know, make certain picks that reach out to wings of his party and probably make certain picks that reach out to conservatives or who are at least not like repellent to Republicans, all of these people have to go through the Senate. And a lot of his picks are going to be determined by what the Senate looks like. So if Republicans hold the Senate, you could expect, you know, for him to make some choices that are more palatable to them. But, you know, it's very much a toss up whether that will be the case. And if he has a Democratic Senate, he can pretty much have his choice.
Let's talk about those names that are circulating. Pete Buttigieg, Karen Bass. Why would they be part of the cabinet?
Look, those two represent, I think, different generational ends of the Democratic Party. Pete Buttigieg and people like him, I think Karen Bass has got a day job. But people like Pete Buttigieg, who the Democratic Party sees as maybe like stars, but know where to go next, like Indiana, where he's from, is a conservative state. He's probably not going to be governor or senator of that state. So cabinet is, you know, the thing that he is, you know, most likely to be in line for. And we saw him forge a good relationship with Joe Biden. Karen Bass, someone with Washington experience, we also saw her really surprise people by how seriously her likelihood of getting the VP nomination was. She didn't get it, but she got some publicity off of that. And one thing Biden said was that just circulating those names of some of those women on that list elevated their profile. And I think he's right in that. I don't think Karen Bass was on my list of people we'd be talking about this 3 months ago. But now I think she's got a very good shot of being in the mix for a good government position next.
Again, we're talking to Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix of The Washington Post, as we go through what Biden's cabinet could look like.
So I think one thing that everyone is wondering, and I think we kind of look up here if Joe Biden gets in, is because Joe Biden's already done this essentially as vice president. But how difficult of a transition is it going to be in between administrations? Because I feel like everyone is just going to automatically be looking at this administration to change everything once they're in office.
Yep, there's a lot that, you know, when President Trump went in, he made it a mission to go in and roll back what President Obama had done. So I think he's going to be putting in people who are going through these agencies and ticking through, maybe people with government experience. You look at somebody like Mitt Romney, Amy Klobuchar, people who have run big agencies and states before and know the levers of government and can go in and start putting things right as he sees it.
What about people like the AOCs out there? Because I feel like there are some stars of the Democratic Party. Is he going to try to create liaisons with them?
I'm sure that I think Elizabeth Warren is the most likely person from that wing of the party to get some love. Julian Castro is another person who has already served in the cabinet, but doesn't have a particularly good relationship. But I think you can look for him to make some picks like that, maybe some surprising one. I'd be surprised if AOC is on that list, but I think he will try to forge some outreach with some picks like that.
Well, one thing that Joe Biden has always been good at is kind of like obviously talking along the party lines and walking along the party lines. Could there be a possibility that there is a Republican in his cabinet? Is that weird?
I think, yeah, it seems not unlikely that there would be a token Republican. It's not unprecedented. President Obama had a Republican or two in his cabinet over the years. And part of Biden's thing is he's going to forge consensus. I wouldn't expect to see more than one or two in cabinet positions, but there are a lot of big name Republicans coming out to support him. So it's not certainly not out of the question.
All right. That would be interesting. All right. Well, thank you again for being with us today. And we'll be with you all week long. I know how hard you're going to be working.
Come back to me at the end of the week. We'll see if I'm still with you.
Yeah, that was Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. Now, coming up, did Kellyanne Conway just leave her White House position due to parenting troubles? We discuss that next in 10 minutes. The Conways are shaking things up today. White House counselor Kellyanne Conway announced last night she's going to leave her post at the end of the month. I was very surprised to hear that when I woke up this morning, by the way. Her husband, George Conway, you know, they're like the yin and yang. She loves Trump. He hates Trump. Don't want to even know what that household is like, by the way, or what how they do things in bed. But George Conway said he was withdrawing also from the Lincoln Project, which was an organization, a super PAC he had created for Republicans against Trump. And they said that they both need to focus on their family. She said in a statement, I will be transitioning from the White House at the end of the month. George is also making changes. We disagree about plenty, but we are united on what matters most, the kids. Our four children are teens and tweens starting a new academic year in middle school and high school remotely from home for at least a few months. As millions of parents nationwide know, kids doing school from home requires a level of attention and vigilance that is as unusual as these times.
Can we talk about this now? Because I lived for this news when I saw it. I thought this was the best news ever. Just because I think Kellyanne Conway and George Conway won. Well, Kellyanne specifically, it seems like, even though they said they're leaving for family issues and just to be closer with their family, it seems like Kellyanne is getting off of a sinking ship. And honestly, what else? Oh, yeah. What was she really doing? What was she really adding to this administration? Didn't feel like anything except for going out and one, probably getting a facelift and then going on news and just talking a whole bunch of crap. That's literally it. Right?
It looks good on her, whatever she's doing.
Oh, for sure.
She looks less tired.
I love a good plastic surgery moment. But my thing is, it's interesting the timing of it all. And I really want to know how much her daughter has played into this, because her daughter has been very vocal, has gone viral several times off of TikTok for her just dragging her parents. I mean, this has been the best situation that I've ever seen, because it's like these kids, these Gen Zers, just they're not following the leads of their parents. They are really shifting and making their own decisions and being like, I do not like this. Who knows? I mean, maybe she's created such a ruffle at home where parents are like, okay, we really need to have a discussion here. Maybe we shouldn't be in the limelight in the way that we are.
Well, I think they realize this is actually impacting their lives and their kids more than they thought. You know what I mean? Like, you're playing with fire here, right? And Claudia Conway, their 15-year-old daughter, she's gone viral on TikTok, posting a lot about her family and dragging them. She even tweeted over the weekend that she is seeking emancipation from her parents. Maybe at that point, they're like, okay, got to get it on the rails right now. Her family is falling apart.
Right, right. I mean, it's bad. My thing is, it was always very weird, this family dynamic, because Kellyanne was working for Trump. George Conway was literally calling Trump, you know, stupid, all these terrible names really going at him. And it just felt like, how can their marriage survive off of this? Clearly, it might not have. And clearly, their family was being ripped apart because Kellyanne Conway was willing to risk everything for Donald Trump.
I can't even imagine having four kids in the house while going through all this. Like, how does that even work?
Can you see
Kellyanne Conway, like, reading you a book to go to bed? Like,
no, that's not even a thing. Who needs that nightmare before going to bed?
Well, NBC News is reporting that Kellyanne Conway is still expected to speak at the Republican National Convention Wednesday. Of course, it starts tonight. And that was previously scheduled. And she is just continuing to do that as planned.
Yeah. And I wonder what her next thing's going to be. Like I said, I honestly have no clue what she added. Being a counselor, a White House counselor, what? I don't even know what that means.
Well, I think that she now is being kind of overshadowed by the press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, the other blonde in the house. So it's like she doesn't need to be as much of a talking head anymore since she's kind of taken the reins on that. Who knows? If I were her, to say that she's burned out is an understatement. I would just take a break. Just take a break, okay? Go take a sabbatical. All right. Well, coming up, Kamala is being put in the hot seat. We have the clip everyone is talking about next in What's Trending This Hour. What's happening right now all over California with the wildfires is just crazy. And you know it's hit another level when you have your family hitting you up, right? Or, you know, I'm from Canada, so I have my Canadian family and international friends hitting me up. Like, what is going on there?
Well, yeah, no one understands kind of the placements of like where you are in California, because California, one, is so huge. And especially when they're talking about Los Angeles area, my mom automatically thinks I'm like right in the middle of the fire. And so that's what can be very alarming, being like, hey, I'm not near it. But even then I have asthma, and she's afraid of like if I'm outside or anything, am I being affected by it? So yeah, a lot of my family members are scared. I get texts on the daily, especially when it happens.
Yeah, so we're sending our love to everyone who is being impacted by this. And like those who are being displaced, having to leave their homes, it's really scary.
Those videos of them like driving through the fire, I will never get used to those videos, because it's a common thing for fires to happen here. But
it is. Whew. But we're going to be getting into what makes California's current major wildfire so unusual right after this, because there's something really different about these fires than what we've seen before. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. In her first interview since accepting the Democratic vice presidential nomination, Senator Kamala Harris sat down with Good Morning America co-anchor Robin Roberts, who asked Harris about her 2009 book, Smart on Crime, which called for more police on the streets.
First of all, when I wrote that book, Black Lives Matter did not exist. And I give full credit to the brilliance of that movement in terms of what it has done to advance a conversation that needed to happen a long time ago. What Black Lives Matter has done as a movement has been to be a counterforce against a very entrenched status quo around the criminal justice system in America. And that's why I'm so excited about what we can do in terms of a new administration in the White House.
Now, it's interesting, Ron, because I know you mentioned you were surprised she didn't talk about this at the DNC last week, but I knew it was coming in the press rounds. This is definitely going to be a big talking point.
Well, of course, I like we said, I don't think it was the right place or time for her to bring it up then, but it would have been nice. It would have been refreshing. But of course, her first big interview, their first big interview together. Yeah, those questions are going to be asked. And I don't know if that answer is still good enough for some. I think it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll tweak it over the campaign as it continues. Now, TikTok. We all know the video sharing app owned by China-based ByteDance. They filed a lawsuit today against the U.S. government challenging the Trump administration's effort to ban the company and its American operations. In a blog post, TikTok argued that the ban prevents the company from due process as guaranteed by the Fifth Amendment. They added that President Donald Trump's executive order made earlier this month under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act ignored the company's efforts to prove it doesn't share data with the Chinese government, and it isn't a national security threat. They said, "We do not take suing the government lightly. However, we feel we have no choice but to take action to protect our rights and the rights of our community and employees." So I guess they're not going with another company buying them anytime soon. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says he wished the league had listened earlier to Colin Kaepernick when he began protesting during the national anthem back in 2016. As we know, he has not played Kaepernick in the NFL since he sparked that controversy by sitting, then kneeling during the national anthem before several games to protest police brutality.
Screw that guy.
Wait, so this was an interesting appearance on Emmanuel Acho's Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, and he was asked how he would apologize to Kaepernick. Here's what he had to say.
Well, the first thing I'd say is I wish we had listened earlier, Cap, to what you were kneeling about and what you were trying to bring attention to.
So, is this enough? Again, Roger Goodell.
No, screw that guy. I think everyone is feeling like, oh, maybe we should have listened sooner. But every moment, everything that he has said has not felt genuine. It just feels like he's trying to move with the moment that is happening, right? And it's unfortunate that Colin still hasn't gotten a job or been put on a team yet. It just is ridiculous. They put him through a lot of microaggressions, a lot of racism. It's
trauma.
I mean, trauma. It's disgusting. And so I don't like this.
Yeah. And once again, where's the action? You can go on as many shows as you want, sound bites galore, but like what actions are going to be alongside all of this? That's the real thing that a lot of people are asking. And have they even talked to Kaepernick? Right? It's kind of awkward. That is awkward when you're just like throwing things out there like you're sorry without any sort of change. All right, let's move into top story in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, I got your tea report. Here are some pop culture stories that are trending right now. Now, here is one thing that I hate. I feel like I've always talked about this idea of Karens, right? And we've talked about Karens, we've laughed at Karens, but here's where it goes a little far. Taryn Manning, guess what? She just signed up to play a Karen on the big screen. It's a new movie. It's basically an upcoming suspense thriller and a story about a racist entitled White Woman in the South who terrorizes her new African-American neighbors. The movie comes from writer and director Coke Daniels. Seems like a mixture, basically, of all the Karens who have become internet famous. Now, Taryn is playing a Karen who believes people should stick to their own kind. So, here's what I hate about this. I want, kind of giving these silly names to these people who are white supremacists and racists is never a good idea. And now you're going to start seeing Hollywood profit off of that and profit off of that storytelling. It just feels disgusting and it doesn't feel good. And who needs to see this? What black people need to go to a movie theater to go see a white woman terrorizing African Americans? Like, no one wants to live that, especially when you live that every day. That's all.
It seems very triggering.
That's your tea report of the pop culture moment that's trending right now.
All right, let's talk about Feed Our Family as an initiative we are continuing to do here at Channel Q and Radio.com because children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry.
All you got to do is text the word need to 76278 to give a buck and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones.
That is need to 76278. Please help out. We appreciate it. Even $1 can make a huge difference. Now coming up, wildfires rage on in California. We tell you what makes them so unusual next in 10 minutes. California is battling massive wildfires right now. And while it's always been seasonal, according to experts, these are actually very unique circumstances. And now we've got Bryce Bennett joining us, a spokesperson for the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Thanks for being here. We know how busy you are right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
So, I mean, I've been living in California for over 15 years, and I know, yeah, it's seasonal. But why right now is this different? Why are there so many wildfires at once?
Well, so what happened is we had a lightning siege come through. And because of Hurricane Genevieve and the remnants of that coming from the south, the moisture came up from Southern California or below Southern California and ran into all this really hot, dry air that came from north winds and the heat wave that we had occurring. So when you get that combination of those two battling, the National Weather Service is very accustomed to this. They're the weather forecasters giving us all of our weather information. You get what's possible of the possibility of dry lightning. And unfortunately, we had an event, and that event was over 13,000 strikes over the course of four or 5 days.
What? What is dry lightning, by the way? Is it actual lightning, but it's dry? Like, I'm confused.
So typical thunder and lightning, you have rain. When you have such high temperatures, what happens is you get dry lightning and there is no rain associated with that thunderstorm. It's double dangerous to have lightning strike with no moisture around it, because what will happen is those lightning strikes will immediately become fires. They don't sleep. They don't hang out. They don't wait for a hot day. They already have a hot day. They have no moisture with them. They're ready to go.
Well, the thing is, you know, California is known for having these wildfires. That's nothing new. But when was the last time we've seen something happen so severely like this?
That would be about 2008. We had a lightning event come through in Northern California. But to give you a couple of quick numbers, that was only 5,000 lightning strikes. And you had about 245,000 acres affected. And that was mostly Northern California. So now we're talking about an event that came through Southern California all the way to Northern California with over 12,000 lightning strikes. We're now at over 1.2 million acres affected by this event. So you have substantially maybe half the number of strikes with over quadruple the number of acreage.
All right, Bryce Bennett is joining us right now, a spokesperson for the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. I mean, just like 2020 with everything else, this seems unprecedented.
Yeah.
I mean, what is going on right now? Like, you're the expert, you're there in the trenches. Obviously, is it climate change? Is it COVID? You know, why all these things intersecting at once?
Well, I can tell you about what we see on the fire lines. And what we are seeing is we are seeing fires growing into large fires quicker, with more intensity, and the days are hotter. Our firefighters are having to battle these fires with increasing temperatures more often. We have fire season lasting way deeper into even December. Just a few years ago, we were on the fire lines at the Thomas Fire in Ventura County, a coastal area that would typically have a little bit more of a reprieve from the coastal influences. We're just not seeing that. We're seeing these large and damaging fires lasting much longer. They're faster, they're bigger, they're meaner, and they're destroying more things in their way.
When does it get to a point where our federal government gets involved? Because it does seem like this is deadly and it's going to keep going. And it's really hard, especially in the midst of COVID-19, to really get enough people out there. So what do you think in that terms should our federal government be involved at this point?
So the federal government is actually always involved here in California. We have federal firefighting resources through the U.S. Forest Service, as well as the National Guard. So those assets are trained with us on the regular every year, whether it's helicopters, their hand crews, or their wildland firefighting fixed wing aircraft. So they work with us hand in hand. So we are always helping each other protect each other's lands. At which volume, I mean, we have, what's our current number? Over 16,000 firefighters working the lines right now. And that is from our state. That's from federal. That's from other states. So, and even more coming. So it's a constant a shift and sharing that occurs between us. So it's very common for that to occur.
Yeah, and I hear we also have an alliance with Australia, and you've asked them for help today as well. I guess, how hard is it to come back from these fires? When are we going to see this end? What do people need to look out for right now?
Well, the biggest thing that we're watching is the weather, because Mother Nature has to give us a break. If she decides to come and drop another lightning storm across us, which we thought was going to occur last night, which it did not, primarily we did have lightning in the Sierras, but we did not have it on the coast. So we were very fortunate. There's still a threat of that occurring this evening. So when she decides to give us a break and have some temperature reprieve, we can get some humidity back in. The wind's more predominant in our favor and actually predictable, because a thunderstorm kind of drops wind in every direction instead of there being one direction. So with a predictable wind, we have a much more aggressive firefight that's safer for the people on the line.
Well, thank you so much for everything everyone is doing. I mean, incredible. I think I'm sweating and sitting in fire in my hot ass apartment, but what y'all are doing is 10 times more important. I just really appreciate it. Thank you so much for putting your life on the lines.
We appreciate it. We love our jobs, so we like helping people.
Now coming up, experts are warning people about the impact of the flu season during COVID-19. What you need to know with our infectious diseases expert, Dr. Michael Sagg, next in 10 minutes. This fall and winter, health experts expect two types of deadly viruses to be circulating widely in the U.S., COVID-19 and the flu. So what happens if or when they collide? Dr. Michael Sagg is back with us. He is our go-to around infectious diseases. Thanks again for being here.
Yeah, it's good to be back. When you proposed it that way, I imaged Ghostbusters and the streams crossing, you know,
right?
Marshmallow Man, they explode.
Oh, but God, that's hilarious.
It is a serious question.
Yeah.
Very serious question.
I mean, it is. What are doctors thinking about as it relates to flu season coming up and what we're dealing with currently with COVID-19?
So I think we can look at it two ways, a positive way and a concerned way. So what I think we're all most concerned about is that we end up with two epidemics occurring at the same time, people coming into the ER with the same type of symptoms, or could even be something like strep throat. You got to sort it all out. Mm. And if it's influenza and if it's COVID, you've got to be able to test, because separating out the COVID patients in the hospitals is critical. The second concern is ICU bed space. We know that a lot of people get sick and go into the unit with influenza every year. Now they're in competition for those beds with COVID patients. And then finally, we really are just concerned about the overall health and well-being of our healthcare workers. The good side, potentially, and I'm hoping for this, is that if we're all wearing masks regularly, that should decrease both, because they're transmitted in about the same way. And we've never gone through a flu season with people wearing masks frequently.
True.
So maybe we'll be able to mitigate it.
Well, one thing that I didn't realize, and we are referencing a Vox.com article where they were talking about the flu season coming up, and they spoke about, like, one thing I guess I didn't realize, that there were different strains of influenza, which is why people have to get, like, new vaccine shots every year. Is that constant evolution why doctors are actually recommending that people get the flu shot? Because for me, I normally didn't get the flu shot. Like, I believe last year was the first time that I had ever got the flu shot, because I thought it was just like, oh, it might be making me sick, so why would I get it?
No, and your thoughts are very commonly held among a lot of people, but people should get a flu shot, and especially this year because of the concurrent epidemics. So to get to your question, the outer coating of the flu virus changes, it mutates, and it's a real devil. It will morph. When the immune system responds to it, it is like a wrestler trying to get out of a wrestling hold. And so as it changes, as it morphs, the immune system that worked last year against it might not work this year in a population level. So what we do is we monitor the flu season down under. So in the south southern hemisphere, and see what kind of viruses are emerging. And then we design the vaccines against those emerging viruses. Of course, they're all influenza, but the details matter. And having a more precise vaccine will be more effective at preventing cases.
And supposedly they haven't seen a lot of cases coming from the south. So does that show what's to come for us? And again, we're talking to Dr. Michael Sagg, who's an infectious diseases expert.
Yeah, so you're right. It's probably because of masking. Australia, New Zealand have done a much better job, most of Asia, than we have in the United States. So the take-home point here is that we don't have quite as much data this year as we have in the past because the flu season's been kind of mild in the Southern Hemisphere. That said, we still have a pretty good sense of what to do, and everyone should get a flu shot. The number one thing I hear is that people don't want to get a flu shot because it's going to make them get the flu. That is not true.
Yeah.
You can get symptoms for a day or two, but you know, your arm gets sore, you might have a low-grade fever. That is nothing like the flu. The flu is horrible. It feels like you got hit by trucks and then it backed up and ran over you again.
It is for sure awful to get the flu. And one, I just want to thank you for giving me that hot reference of wrestling. It's just so good. Thank you so much for that. But I guess, how should the country really prepare for flu season? Because it didn't seem like they really prepared for COVID-19. So what should we really be looking for?
Number one, everyone should get a flu shot. Number two, everyone should wear a mask to prevent COVID and the flu. Keep social distance or physical distance like we've been doing, and avoid crowds. All those things help. And as much as possible, I would prefer that we avoid indoor dining for a while and certainly avoid bars. I hate to say it, but the bars are the hot spots. That's where a lot of transmission happens.
So if you're single, you're probably going to be getting sick less. Not single. If you're coupled, you'll probably get sick less.
Sorry. We're in weird times, right? We've never gone through this before. And it is going to take a little bit of sacrifice on our parts. And I think we can get through it. And if we can get this all under control, we'll be better off for it several months from now.
What are the differences in terms of symptoms?
Yeah. The flu comes on all of a sudden. Boom, you're hit like a truck. It's mostly headache, fever, body aches, and some degree of pretty bad cough, but usually not shortness of breath. COVID, it comes on more gradually. This fever may not happen until day six, and it is a cough, a lot of headache, and a lot of huge amounts of fatigue in both. But with COVID, it's shortness of breath is more of a chronic, as a presenting symptom. Diarrhea also is kind of common with COVID. And the real thing that tells the difference, loss of sense of smell. You lose your sense of smell, you probably have COVID.
All right. Well, Dr. Michael Sagg, thanks so much again for being with us today.
Great to be back with you.
Now, is Melania Trump about to be exposed for dissing Donald and Ivanka Trump? We have all the juicy tea coming up in a new book next in 10 minutes. We usually don't have that much to say about Melania Trump beyond wink if you need help. But now, Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, a former longtime friend of Melania, is coming out with these secretly recorded conversations of the First Lady dissing husband Donald Trump and her stepdaughter Ivanka Trump. It's the conversations we've been waiting for, I guess, or we imagined, right? Wolkoff has this tell-all book called Melania and Me, The Rise and Fall of My Friendship with the First Lady. It's going to be released on September 1st, right around the corner, and it's going to detail their crumbling 15-year friendship and why this woman, Wolkoff, left her role as a First Lady senior advisor in February 2018.
All right, so here's a couple of things. I hate this. I hate that this lady is deciding to come out with this book. And also, you know, she has recorded conversations. Like, what type of friend does that? And I mean, also, I think it goes into this role of like saying, like, maybe you shouldn't be working with your friends. Like, some people can't handle that, because this lady was the First Lady senior advisor. And so she's kind of like every other advisor who leaves an administration and then comes out with a book about kind of their experience or what's going on. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad if they didn't have a friendship, but this is awful to know that they were friends for 15 years and this lady is doing this. Like, screw her, to be quite honest. I'm not even a fan of this entire administration or Melania, but that is awful.
Well, yeah, two wrongs don't make a right, but I get at this point, I mean, all these books coming out from every corner of the administration or people that used to work with the president and first lady is kind of ridiculous. And it says a lot about what's happening. And her actually her book description says that their relationship all fell apart when she was made the scapegoat for inauguration finance irregularities. Melania could have defended her innocent friend and confidant, but she stood by her man, knowing full well who was really to blame. The betrayal nearly destroyed Wolkoff. So I guess at that point, she's like, F this. These people are not doing the right thing.
Well, duh, but my thing is birds of a feather flock together. So clearly this woman is just as terrible as the Trump family. And let's be honest here. Melania is a young wife. She comes in because they're saying that she talks a lot of crap about Trump and the Trump's older kids. Of course, if I'm imagining a young stepmom coming in to the kid to kids who are probably around her same age, of course there's going to be turmoil. Of course there's going to be this awkwardness. Like, I'm not shocked by this information.
Yeah, but finally we get to hear it. I mean, it is juicy. You know, the other book that came out from his niece, the book that was called Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. You could say a lot of people were like excited about that book, but it didn't really reveal anything new, right? It wasn't that surprising to hear that he's a sociopath narcissist. This though, this book I feel like is the one maybe people have been waiting for, because like you do want to hear those conversations, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But also, what are they saying that we aren't saying? If she agrees with us, well, girl, look, we just have that in common.
Well, this book promises to describe Melania's reaction to the infamous Access Hollywood, you know, tape where her husband bragged he would just grab women by the P word, as well as the reasoning behind her infamous, I really don't care, do you jacket. Oh, watch out.
I don't know. I doubt it's going to be all of that, because like I said, if they had a 15-year crumbling relationship, they could have been friends during that time, but there could probably were developing trust issues, and who knows what this lady really has.
I mean, how many books about this family can we actually read? Like, all these books are coming out within a month of each other. How smart is that strategically from the publisher's
end? I ain't reading nothing.
Well, this actually comes on the heels of a recorded conversation between Donald Trump's niece, Mary Trump, and the president's older sister, Marianne Trump Barry, that was released by the Washington Post on August 22nd. This was also secretly taped by Mary Trump, who published that book I just mentioned. And here that clip is.
Talking to Greeley, but you know, it, the change of stories, the lack of preparation, the lying, the holy shit. But he's appealing to the base, what they're doing with the kids at the border. I mean,
but once again, not that surprising. And I'm hoping for something juicier here. All right. Well, coming up, Joe Biden unveiled his income limit for new taxes if he is elected. Find out if you are safe next in What's Trending This Hour. We're back. And remember, we're bringing you coverage of the RNC all week long. We did it for the DNC. So we're doing it for the RNC too.
I'm happy I had a therapy session on Saturday. It really
helped. Oh, did you?
It helps me push through to talking about this. So yeah, of course.
Self-care.
We gotta be bipartisan here.
Exactly. And if you miss anything, a reminder that we do have a podcast, go to the radio.com app and search Let's Go There and join our podcast family to catch up on everything. Now let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. In the first joint interview with the Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, the former VP told ABC World News Tonight anchor David Moore that everybody should pay their fair share of taxes.
These taxes for anybody making over $400,000. Let me tell you why I'm going to do it. It's about time they start paying a fair share of the economic responsibility we have. The very wealthy should pay a fair share. Corporations should pay a fair share. The fact is, there are corporations making close to $1 trillion that pay no tax at all. I'm not punishing anybody. This is about everybody paying their fair share.
Now, a CBS News YouGov poll released Sunday found that Americans view the severity of the coronavirus pandemic and the effectiveness of the government's response through a very partisan lens. Not surprising. More than 176,000 people in the U.S. have died from COVID-19. And according to this poll, a 57% majority of registered Republican voters consider that number acceptable when evaluating the U.S. efforts against the pandemic, compared with 31% of voters overall. Listen to this, 90% of Democrats and 67% of independents said the death toll was unacceptable.
So what you're telling me is that guess what? All lives don't really matter, huh? Is that what you're saying? Because if 50% of Republicans feel that way, they don't care about all lives, because those lives, unfortunately, have died because of COVID and because this president has not handled it correctly. I mean, honestly, these people have to be brainwashed. It's such a disappointment.
Well, there's excuses. Oh, they're old. Oh, they had pre-existing conditions. Oh, they're also, this is interesting coming from the study. Republicans were also more likely to believe the official death toll is inflated, even though public health officials like Dr. Anthony Fauci have said the actual number of deaths from the virus is likely higher. 40% of registered Republicans believe the number of deaths is lower than reported, while 18% said it was probably about right, and another 18% said the actual number of deaths was likely higher than reported.
Well, all I'm saying is y'all might need to find y'all another slogan, because what you're saying is not matching what you're clearly voting on when it comes to these surveys and polls.
Yeah, it's interesting information that we have there. Now, this is messed up. A California firefighter's wallet was stolen out of his work vehicle and his bank account was drained while he was battling the fire. We've come to a new low here. It was the latest robbery during the wildfires in Santa Cruz. And this comes from Chief Deputy Chris Clark, who says, "It's absolutely disgusting behavior. I can't believe that somebody would actually have the nerve to break into a firefighter's vehicle or enter their vehicle to steal something from them when they're here to protect the community. It blows me away." Officials said that they're still investigating who stole the firefighter's wallet, and the incident follows a case of looting that occurred days prior.
Wait, so was the car at the site where the firefighter was fighting the fire? Because that's what I'm confused on, because where was this car at? Because how would this person have known, like, oh, that's a firefighter's vehicle? But either way,
maybe
it's trifling.
Maybe it was at the firefighter place where they all are.
Oh, like, yeah, the firehouse?
The firehouse.
Not the firehouse subs, but the actual firehouse.
I don't know. I don't know where the car was specifically, but it was his, and it was while he was working, okay?
That's trifling. I mean, karma's real, people.
Yep. All right. Let's move into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right. I got your tea report, those pop culture stories that are trending right now. And if you did not know, over the weekend was Kobe Bryant's 42nd birthday. And Vanessa Bryant basically wrote an emotional tribute on Instagram, saying this: "To my baby, happy birthday. I love you and I miss you more than I can ever explain. I wish you and Gigi were here to celebrate you. I wish I could make you and your favorite food or a birthday cake with my Gigi." And, you know, obviously this comes after her late daughter, Gigi, who died in the January 26th helicopter crash, along with her father, Kobe Bryant, which honestly feels like decades ago at this point. I can't even imagine January at this point, but it really was the kickoff to this hellhole that we're living in that we call 2020. She continued on saying this, and this is what really hit. She said, "I wish I could wake up with this from this horrible nightmare. I wish I could surprise our girls and welcome you and Gigi home to us. I am mad I didn't go first. I always wanted to go first so that I selfishly didn't have to feel this heartache. You were supposed to miss me. Gigi was supposed to be here with her sister. It should have been me." Oh.
Yeah,
oh my God.
It's hard. It's
chills.
Hard.
I got chills reading that. It was so sad. And obviously, if you don't know, today is actually Kobe Bryant Day. In 2016, Los Angeles City Council resolution declared August 24th as Kobe Bryant Day in perpetuity. Did I say that word right?
You know, perpetuity.
I always
just
mess
say,
up those
is
words.
It just say, oh, okay. Just say for like.
No, I mean, I'm still recording,
okay.
Shira.
This is how we help each other out.
It is. And so today is Kobe Bryant Day, and that is your tea report, those pop culture stories that are trending right now.
And let's wrap this up with talking about Feed Our Families, because we're doing this great initiative here at radio.com, because children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry. And here's an easy way for you to help feed local students and their families.
All right. All you got to do is text the word need to 76278 to give a buck and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones.
Yeah, that's need to 76278. And a reminder that today, LA Car Guy is matching all donations dollar for dollar up to $5,000. So please donate if you haven't already. If you have, keep donating. We appreciate it. Now coming up, Dr. Jen Mann joins us next to discuss what to do if your partner is getting a bit lazy with their look during the pandemic. That's next in 10 minutes. Relationships are going through a lot during COVID. I mean, we hear the horror stories, don't we? And we have some of your advice questions, and Dr. Jen Mann is here to answer them. I'm so excited for this. You, of course, know Dr. Jen from VH1's Couples Therapy and Family Therapy with Dr. Jen and the Dr. Jen Show. And she's filling in on Drop the Subject all week long. Thanks for being part of the Channel Q fam again.
It is my pleasure.
So let's get right into this, because there are some fun questions that people are throwing out there. Starting with this one. All right. This person asks, I have a great relationship with my girlfriend, whom I've been dating for more than a year. Our communication is open and clear about most topics, except this one. Small thing. Sometimes I wish she would wear makeup on the special nights we go out, or even once in a while for the fun of it. At the same time, I'm extremely reluctant to voice this desire. I know that women are expected to spend way more time and money on their appearance than men. I don't want to hurt her feelings or suggest that I don't like her the way she is. So I think, by the way, Dr. Jen, a lot of people experience this also during these times. I mean, not wearing makeup, you're kind of chill right now, you're not dressing up. So what is your advice for people going through this?
Okay, my advice may surprise you, because as you guys probably know, I'm a feminist. I've been marching for social justice causes since I can pretty much stand up, and have had my children doing the same. But understand, I'm also a relationship therapist. And I think that it's really important that we work to be our best selves, both for ourselves and for our partner. And that we want our partner to be attracted to us. And if doing something as simple as putting on a little makeup can make our partner happy, why not do it? It'd be one thing if this person was saying, like, I want you to wear it every day and spend an hour a day doing it. Like, okay, it's a time suck. That would feel really controlling. But you know what? For a special date night, if your partner likes makeup, I'm all for it. So I think that this person needs to ask. And I think that it's interesting that it's so difficult to make such a small ask in this relationship. That says something to me about their communication or the level of sensitivity that's going on in their relationship.
Mm-hmm. So
that's something that I think, you know, kind of side note, probably needs to be addressed, because it's very important that couples are able to give each other feedback about all things good, bad, desires, things that turn you on, things that turn you off. So that's a separate conversation. But I'm a big fan of the sandwich method. Start with the positive, end with the positive. You are just the most beautiful woman, whether you wear makeup or not. Yeah. I always love looking at how amazingly gorgeous you are. But it would really mean a lot to me if maybe on our date night, you might be willing to kind of spruce up the makeup thing and do that, because it just really turns me on. And I just really love the way you look with that. And look, I know you're a busy person and you do so much for our household. I hope that that's a fair request to you. But, you know, I love you so much. And I'm so grateful to have a wonderful partner like you. Boom.
You hear Dr. Jen Mann, who's giving us some relationship advice during COVID times right now.
I mean, my thing is, one thing that I find interesting is this idea of like talking about appearances in your relationship. It can be very touchy for people who deal with like insecurity issues or they're going through their own kind of body dysmorphia or anything, especially now more than ever in the state of this pandemic. How do you navigate that? Because it doesn't just feel as simple as starting with the positive, ending with the positive, right?
Well, look, again, I'm a big believer that we have a huge responsibility both to ourselves and our partner to be the best us that we can be. And I think that when it comes to body image stuff, and, you know, usually body image stuff revolves around weight. And I think that it's important that we approach our partner more on the health aspect than the aesthetic aspect first. That to say like, hey, honey, I've noticed that you put on a lot of weight. I love you and you're sexy and amazing, but I'm worried. Like, it seems kind of like you're turning to food to deal with your anxiety about the quarantine and about the pandemic. Is everything okay? How can I support you? Because look, if someone in your life is suddenly putting on a lot of weight, it's a symptom of a problem. It's no different than if they were drinking or they were drugging or they were gambling. A lot of people right now are turning to different substances. And look, food, we tend to think of as a more benign substance. It's available, it's not illegal, but at the same time, we can do damage to our health and well-being and also our emotions. Because when we turn to food and we are drowning our sorrows in food, it tends to kind of build this cycle of you eat, then you, because you feel bad, then you feel bad because you ate, then you eat because you feel bad, and you go in a loop. So I think that it's really important to first address kind of the health and emotional aspect. And then at some point, if the issue is continuing, I do think that you got to be real. Like, you got to say, like, hey, you know, this is impacting our sex life. This is impacting my attraction to you. You know, I once got a call from a woman at a radio show I was doing who called and said, you know, I'm so angry at my partner. And, you know, he says I've gained weight. He says he's not as attracted to me. And, you know, I think it's terrible. And he's just such a bad person. And what a critical person he is. And I said, well, you know, how much weight are we talking? And I thought she'd be like, oh, you know, 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 100 pounds she had gained.
But
quarantine, 100 pounds in the quarantine?
A while back, like in the course of a year, she gained 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing. What we're not about to do is body shame anyone.
And we don't want to.
And what we're not going to do, we're going to make sure we're not body shaming people. But if she wanted to put in that rate, being skinny does not correlate with healthy. Let's just be honest.
And look, I wrote my doctoral dissertation about weight loss and eating disorders. I had an eating disorder for 10 years. So I get this, not just on a professional level, but on a personal
level. Yeah.
Look, food is a substance. And it's a complicated relationship we have with our food.
Well, Dr. Jinman, oh my God, we have so many other questions. We're going to bring you back this week so you can answer them because, you know, it's tough out there for COVID relationships and we definitely need some of your help. So we appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, that was Dr. Jinman, VH1's Couples Therapy, and of course, filling in on Drop the Subject right here on Channel Q all week long. Now, coming up, as the Democratic Party comes off of the DNC, many are wondering what Joe Biden's cabinet might look like. We tell you the big names that could be part of the future of the White House when we return. As the DNC has come and gone, many are wondering now what Vice President Joe Biden's cabinet might look like. And back with us to share the big names that could be on that list is editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, Natalie Jennings. So let's get right into this. First, what's the role of the cabinet exactly? Why is this something that is on people's minds?
Well, because these are the people who sort of pick a topic area, pick a policy area, and these are the people who are going to have the president's ear the most on these issues. I think it's funny. So we got this question of who will be Biden's number two 2 weeks ago about thereabouts, and we move right on to figuring out the next questions. I think what we're going to do is take a lot of people who didn't make that position. So Kamala Harris is the VP, everybody who is being considered that, you can just go ahead and slide them into a bucket for consideration for all of these positions.
Obviously, like, making a decision like this feels so important. Could this be where we see Joe Biden has more progressive leaders in his cabinet?
I think you can expect a diversity of, racial and gender diversity, but I think you can also expect some ideological diversity for him to, you know, make certain picks that reach out to wings of his party and probably make certain picks that reach out to conservatives or who are at least not like repellent to Republicans. All of these people have to go through the Senate. And a lot of his picks are going to be determined by what the Senate looks like. So if Republicans hold the Senate, you could expect, you know, for him to make some choices that are more palatable to them. But, it's very much a toss up whether that will be the case. And if he has a Democratic Senate, he can pretty much have his choice.
Let's talk about those names that are circulating. Pete Buttigieg, Karen Bass. Why would they be part of the cabinet?
Look, those two represent, I think, different generational ends of the Democratic Party. Pete Buttigieg and people like him, I think Karen Bass has got a day job. But people like Pete Buttigieg, who the Democratic Party sees as maybe like stars, but nowhere to go next, like Indiana, where he's from, is a conservative state. He's probably not going to be governor or senator of that state. So cabinet is, you know, the thing that he is most likely to be in line for. And we saw him forge a good relationship with Joe Biden. Karen Bass, someone with Washington experience, we also saw her really surprise people by how seriously her likelihood of getting the VP nomination was. She didn't get it, but she got some publicity off of that. And one thing Biden said was that just circulating those names of some of those women on that list elevated their profile. And I think he's right in that. I don't think Karen Bass was on my list of people we'd be talking about this 3 months ago. But now I think she's got a very good shot of being in the mix for a good government position next.
Again, we're talking to Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post, as we go through what Biden's cabinet could look like.
So I think one thing that everyone is wondering, and I think we kind of look up here if Joe Biden gets in, is because Joe Biden's already done this essentially as vice president. But how difficult of a transition is it going to be in between administrations? Because I feel like everyone is just going to automatically be looking at this administration to change everything once they're in office.
Yep, there's a lot that, you know, when President Trump went in, he made it a mission to go in and roll back what President Obama had done. So I think he's going to be putting in people who are going through these agencies and ticking through, maybe people with government experience. You look at somebody like Mitt Romney, Amy Klobuchar, people who have run big agencies and states before and know the levers of government and can go in and start putting things right as he sees it.
What about people like the AOCs out there? Because I feel like there are some stars of the Democratic Party. Is he going to try to create liaisons with them?
I'm sure that I think Elizabeth Warren is the most likely person from that wing of the party to get some love. Julian Castro is another person who has already served in the cabinet, but doesn't have a particularly good relationship. But I think you can look for him to make some picks like that, maybe some surprising one. I'd be surprised if AOC is on that list, but I think he will try to forge some outreach with some picks like that.
Well, one thing that Joe Biden has always been good at is kind of like obviously talking along the party lines and walking along the party lines. Could there be a possibility that there is a Republican in his cabinet? Is that weird?
I think, yeah, it seems not unlikely that there would be a token Republican. It's not unprecedented. President Obama had a Republican or two in his cabinet over the years. And part of Biden's thing is he's going to forge consensus. I wouldn't expect to see more than one or two in cabinet positions, but there are a lot of big name Republicans coming out to support him. So it's not certainly not out of the question.
All right. That would be interesting. All right. Well, thank you again for being with us today. And we'll be with you all week long. I know how hard you're going to be working.
Come back to me at the end of the week. We'll see if I'm still with you.
Yeah, that was Natalie Jennings, editor of The Fix for The Washington Post. Now coming up, the story of a real-life Batman helping those in need during the pandemic. That's next on our Yaz Queen of the Day. Before we get into our Yaz Queen of the Day, a reminder about Feed Our Families, because children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry. And that's why here at radio.com, we are getting you involved to help out. All you have to do is text the word NEED to 76278. Need to 76278 to give a dollar even. That can make a huge difference. And today, LA Car Guy is matching all of your donations dollar for dollar up to $5,000. So let's,
you know, Yes, Your Tease from 97.1 Amp Radio, our sister station, was on KTLA, not today, but this weekend. And she looked phenomenal. She did so good. She was talking about this. So this is something that you really want to get involved in. It's changing so many people's lives. And so, yeah, please donate.
I love that. All right, let's get into our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
This one goes to a father-daughter duo, Mayana Lifshitz, who's 19, and her father, Yosef, who started Books for Cause in 2009 after seeing textbooks thrown away just 1 year after use. I find this so smart. I'm all about like continuing to use something even though most people just throw it away. And since then, hundreds of thousands of books have been donated to the cause. It now fills 110 libraries in Africa. And when the coronavirus pandemic hit the U.S., they knew the need would grow here too. So they opened a free library in North Milwaukee with thousands of books inside. Every book is completely free. And here they are talking about their work.
My favorite thing is like telling them that the books are free.
Algebra hasn't changed that much in like hundreds of years. So why is this algebra book not have any value? What reading does provide is education, and that education lengthens lives.
How many chances are we talking about here for these books?
As many chances until it's falling apart.
It might seem like really simple, but the escapism that it provides is like incredible.
So they plan to actually open other free libraries on the south and west sides of Chicago, and Books for Cause is also helping to fill empty storefronts hit hard by that pandemic too.
I just love this idea.
Oh my God. Yeah. As a kid who was a avid book reader and who wants to jump back into books, I find this to be so wonderful. I used to spend so much of my time, one, volunteering during the summers at the library. Yeah, I did the summer reading program and I volunteered all the time. It was like my thing to do. I was kind of like a nerd, actually.
You know what? I always discover new things about Ryan's childhood on the show. Yes. And it's fascinating.
Yes. There's so much to learn. But no, something like this means so much to the communities that it's in. And the guy was right. You know, Yusef, he was talking about, you know, these books, they still have so much to them. Why are we acting like, you know, we can't get anything out of it? And so I'm happy that there's programs like this that are like happening. So beautiful.
Yeah, love it. Now this one goes to a man in Santiago, Chile, who has been dressing up as Batman on the streets. And he's a real life hunger fighter. He's distributing food to the city's homeless population on a regular basis. So he goes out in his white SUV, fully stocked with a cargo of hot meals. He wears the shiny black costume, complete with a cape and two masks. One, of course, is the comic book ears and eye slots, the other for COVID-19 protection. He's called the Solidarity Batman, and he's doing his part to make life during Chile's lockdown more bearable for some of those hit hard by the pandemic. And he chose the Batman outfit to cheer people up, and it also just fosters a feeling of togetherness. I love this, a real life superhero. So yes, queen, to this guy.
Yes, queen.
Yep. Oh, God, love it. What superhero would you dress up as if you had to take on the streets of L.A.?
The most naked one out of them all, because it's too damn hot to be dressed up in no hot-ass costume.
Huh. I wonder if there's been a naked superhero before. Something to think about.
No, the one that's wearing the least amount of clothing. I still want to wear clothing, She-Ra. You know?
All right. Well, that does it for a Yas Queen. And again, you can nominate someone or an organization for a Yas Queen of the Day. Just slide into our DMs at LGT Show anytime. Now, coming up on tomorrow's show, as we wait for a COVID-19 vaccine, we're going to be giving you the tips on having a productive conversation with vaccine skeptics. Because that can get a bit frustrating.
Sure. If you just want to learn how to talk to your friends, please do another show.
Plus, how to deal with debt collectors and get what you want. And it seems like Ryan's an expert at this, so I'm excited to hear.
Yes, honey. Oh, my God. I am on my own financial journey and docking with debt collectors and all that stuff. So this is exciting. I like stuff like this.
Yeah, that's tomorrow's show. Let's go there, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We're sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.